right. Well, it's great to be here with you guys today. Over the last few weeks, over the last month, really, we have been walking through the book, or really, I should say, the letter of 1 Timothy. And next week, we're going to wrap this thing up. But today, what I want to do is we're going to try to attempt to cover all of chapter 5, all right? So it's going to be a lot of stuff. You're going to have to keep up with me. It's going to be a little complicated, but I think we can all do it. And on top of that, I plan on offending a little bit of everybody in here today, okay? So that's coming. So get ready for that, because we're going to be talking about old people. We're going to talk about men. We're going to talk about women. I'm going to have to tell some of you women what to do, all right? That's never fun, okay? So we got that. We'll see how that goes. We're going to talk about what kind of people we as a church should be helping or shouldn't be helping. We're talking about honoring pastors and what to do when they sin. So that's going to be a lot of fun even right there. But before we dive into this, I want us to remember kind of the overarching what's going on here. This was a letter written by a guy named Paul to a young pastor named Timothy. Now, Timothy is probably in his late 20s, and he's pastoring at a church in this huge city, Roman city, called Ephesus. And now Paul and Timothy had met years before when Paul was traveling around. He traveled around the Mediterranean teaching people and telling people about Jesus. And so he went from town to town to town, city to city to city, telling people about Jesus. And he stopped in this smaller town called Lystra, and there he met Timothy, and they kind of hit it off. Right, Timothy gives his life to Jesus, and he's saved, and Timothy, it sounds like, just from the little things that we know, the bits and pieces in the Bible that we know about him, he may not have had like a real great relationship with his dad, and so it looks like he's raised by his mom and his grandma. And so what Paul does is he takes Timothy under his wing, and he gets to be like the dad that Timothy never had, and he shows him how to live for God like a man. All right, that's what Paul does. So Paul cares about this guy, and he views this guy as like a son. And he starts off this letter, if you remember, a few weeks ago, kind of the main thing is he says, Timothy, he kind of sits him down. He's writing this thing. He's like, hey, I want you to, as the pastor, I want you to teach the church. I want you to teach the Bible, teach God's words. That's so important. It's kind of like what we're doing right now. And then he reminds Timothy of the structure of the church family and how it's supposed to be ordered, and he gives qualifications for pastors, elders, and deacons. Those are people who serve. He gives instructions like, hey, when you're, you know, the church people, I want them to, like, you know, do normal stuff like dress modestly and live a quiet life, meaning don't stir up trouble in your community, whether that's on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, all right? That all counts the same thing. He tells us men. He says, man, I want you guys to step up in the church, and I want you to lead. And women, I want you to work together with the men. And so now, at this point in his letter, he's kind of given all these instructions, like this is how everything is supposed to be organized. What we see now is that Paul's going to shift to some specific problems that the church in Ephesus was dealing with. Now, I don't know about you. Maybe you haven't been around church very much or very long, but you know, if you don't realize it or not, but churches back then used to have problems. Can you imagine that? A church with a problem? What? Like, is that for real? Right? Is those out there? Yeah, apparently it was in Ephesus. Not here in Tiffin, no way, right? Okay, I'm joking. Okay, all right. You guys are going to have to lighten up a little bit, third service people, okay? Like, work with me here. It's going to be a long, I can go as long as I want to, okay? It's going to be a long, you know, 45 minutes to go there. But so here's the deal. These are instructions for you and for me who are a part of this church here in Tiffin, okay? That's how I want us to view this as we read through this today. Are you ready? Okay, all right, there we go. That's a little better. Here we go. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 1. He says, all right, Timothy, don't rebuke an older man. And let's stop right there, because the first question I had as I'm reading through this week, I'm like, well, what's an older man? Am I an older man? All right, is it, you know, my parents' age? Is it my grandparents' age? Like, what constitutes like an older man? And so I think we can all agree, by the way, that if you are in your 20s and you're a man in here, and if you are in your, let's say, early 30s, okay, you are definitely not an older man, okay? So let's just draw the line a little bit. Let's just say this. If you are 36 years old or younger, raise your hand, like proud. Hi. All right. There you go. We got a lot of you guys in here. That's cool. Okay. You're young. That's awesome. That's great. What Paul's telling you here, basically, is it might be better if you just learn to shut up. okay? Like, that might be good for you, and you should consider that once in a while in your life, okay? That's like, that's what he's saying. Now, for me, I just kind of drew this imaginary line at 36. I'm 37, okay? So you can see why I did that. And although I look in the mirror at myself, I see my hair thinning, and sometimes I wake up in the morning, I look down, my neck just starts hurting for no reason. And just last week, Toby, my own son, flesh and blood, came up to me and was like, "Dad, you got gray on your chin, like, you know, your hair on your chin." He's like, "Man, you're getting old." And I'm like, he's like looking at me like thinking I'm gonna die or something. I'm like, "Dude, you back off, kid. Okay, you just back off." No, what Paul's probably saying, the line that Paul would probably draw in the sand would be around the age of 60. Now, before, we're going to offend everybody, so I guess I don't even have to say this. It doesn't even matter. But when I was a kid, you know, like, I'm in high school, I'll be honest with you, 60, and we're all the same age, so don't, you were the same, okay? I looked at the age of 60, and I remember being like, "Dude, 60? Dude, that's old." All right, like, you're like getting ready to die old. Like, get your affairs in order, because you ain't got much longer. Like, that type of thing. But now that I'm, let's say, solidly in my 30s, okay, I look at 60 and I'm like, "Oh man, that's not that far." All right, 60's not old. All right, 60, you can like basically do everything that you're always able to do, only this time you have money, right? Because you have like your career, you're well established and stuff like that. And so now I'm looking at 60 and I'm like, "Man, 60 ain't old. That's not that far away. I'm like over halfway there. That's not good." And so what Paul, if he's saying this, if he were standing here today, I don't think he would say the word 60, because people live longer. And so by Paul's standards, if we want to get technical, it's probably for us somewhere in like the 80s. And so what Paul, for an older man. And so Paul's saying, "Hey man, don't rebuke Timothy as a young guy, as a young pastor. Don't rebuke an older man," meaning don't shame an older man. But instead, he says, "Exhort him as a father." This word exhort, that's not a word that we normally use here today, but it's really just another word for encourage, right? He's saying encourage the older guy as you would your dad. Now, when we think of the word encourage, a lot of us, we're like, "Oh yeah, encourage him. Like, hey man, nice truck, you know?" All right, it's a little more than that. Or some of us, let's be honest, we're a little softer these days, I think, and you're like, you know, for you, encouragement's like you go up to somebody and you're like, "Man, I just want to let you know, I think you're very, very brave for typing that comment that I saw the other week, you know, on Facebook or wherever. You know, that was just so brave of you. Wow." You know, that ain't what Paul's talking about here, okay? That's not the type of encouragement that he's looking for. Exhort and encouragement in the Bible, I'm just teach you something, all right, is way more forceful than that. All right, so it's not coming up along somebody, giving, patting them on the head and saying, "Wow, good job, little buddy." All right, that's not what it is. It's way more than a compliment. It's literally pushing them to do what's right. All right, that's what it is. So you're encouraging somebody. You are pushing them in the right direction. And sometimes pushing people isn't always the easiest thing that we can do. And so remember, Timothy is young. And so Paul's saying, when you are teaching older men, because that is what you are required to do as a leader in this church, he's saying, but when you do it, Timothy, you do that with some respect. That's what he's saying. And when you see an older man morally failing in some area of his life, he's saying you don't embarrass him. You don't yell at him. You don't shame him publicly or anything like that. But you also don't just let it go either. He's saying you encourage him like you would a dad that you care about. You push him in the right direction in a gentle way. See, when we talk to each other as a family, as a church, even when we are correcting each other, so that's always uncomfortable and it's, you know, it's just like awkward and everything like that. When we do that, it should be different than the way the world does it. We understand that, right? When we correct each other, we correct each other in an encouraging way, not in a "you're an idiot" type way, okay? That's what the world does. And by the way, can I just point this out? Order matters, okay? Order matters. Parents, if your first words out of your mouth are demeaning and tearing your kids down, I'm just saying your next 5 encouraging words, whatever that might mean to you, they are really going to be hard for your kids to hear. The order is important. Also, contrary to popular belief, we don't have to criticize everything that we disagree with. Huh? What? Yeah. Imagine that. We don't have to criticize everything that we disagree with, whether that's in person or online. Like, we don't have to comment on every little thing. Not everything that we feel inside of here, check this out, needs to be said. That, by the way, is free. Okay, that's not in here. That's just free, but that's true. So some of us, we need to hear that, and that's a big deal. So he says, don't rebuke an older man, right? Don't shame him in that way, but exhort him, encourage him as you would a dad. And younger men, as brothers. So if you're a little older in here and you got some, you know, some guy in his 20s or 30s, he comes up to you and he calls you bro and you're like, dude, I'm not your bro. All right, technically he's theologically correct. You are his bro. And so you got to get used to that. So he says, treat them as fathers and as brothers. He says, treat the older women as mothers and the younger women as sisters with all purity. Now, what do you notice? What's he doing here? What's he saying? What's he teaching us? He's saying, I want you to view yourself as a family, as dads, brothers, mothers, and sisters. That's how we at Grace are to view each other. When we come here on Sundays or throughout the week, we are to view each other as a large, dysfunctional, that's true, family. And now some of you guys, you didn't grow up in a model family. I understand that. And some of you, maybe even here today, like right now as you sit in your seat, like, the honest truth is, you're truthful with yourself, like, you feel alone. You feel like you've been kind of maybe alone or on your own for a long time. Like, you feel like you have no family because your relationship with your biological family just isn't right, and it's not good. But I'm just saying, if you are a part of this church, man, we are your family. God views us as belonging to you. And so we are your family. By the way, that means that, you know, if you're a woman in here, and there's a lot of people asking what that is these days. Okay, so let me just define that real quick. That is an adult female human. Okay, that's a woman. If you're one of those, whether you have kids or not, can I just say this? You are a mom here at church, or at least you're called to be. Whether you're able to have kids or you have biological kids or not, right, you are to be a mom here at church. Why? Because this is a family. And we need your help to raise all those little things at Grace Kids. Like, we need you to be a part of that. Like, we need you to put input in there. Like, we need your help. See, we are a family. I mean, look around real quick. Let's just do this. Like, look around, right? Make that awkward eye contact with somebody across the room. That's totally fine. We're family. Okay, like, get right? It's awkward, but like, we're all in this together. You know, like, I know it ain't much to look at, but like, we are all in this together, and we need to view each other that way. We are a family that does life together in with one common goal and one common mission, which is to do whatever we possibly can to reach as many people as we possibly can with the news of what Jesus has done for them. Now, with that context, Paul's going to get real practical real quick. And so he's saying, let me set some guidelines. Let me set some ground rules for what this looks like. He's saying, I want you as a church family, I want you to take care of each other. I want you to be there for each other. Now, when it comes to how the church takes care of each other, specifically when it's helping people like financially and stuff like that, he's saying, this is how I want you to view it. Because you're all family, I want you, he says, to at least support the widows who are genuinely in need. So this is what Paul does. He kind of goes to an extreme. He's like, okay, the single women who have no husband to take care of them, and especially in that day and age, would need financial help. He says, I want you to support them, and I want the church to take care of them, but only the ones who are genuinely in need. Now, why does he have to say that? Why does he have to put that word in there? All right, what's that mean? I mean, does that mean that there were people who classified themselves as people in need of help who weren't actually in need of help and they were trying to work the system? No, not at church. Church people wouldn't do that. You know, people wouldn't do that in this day and age. No way. I can't even believe that. You know what I mean? Like, for real? Yeah, he's saying, hey, this is a big deal. You need to make sure you're helping people who actually need the help. Now, again, being a widow in Roman culture was a little different than today. Back then, what would happen is when the dad or the husband passed away, his property didn't necessarily stay with the mom or the wife, right? Like it would today if they were married. right? Because his property would actually, when he dies, it would actually become an inheritance to their children. And so they would receive their property and they would receive their money and everything like that, which is not a bad thing, okay? That's not a bad way to do things. It's just different like than what we're used to here today. So as you can imagine, that brought up at least a couple problems. Number one, if you were too old to work and your husband dies and all your stuff is suddenly given to all your kids, that really puts you as a woman in a tough spot. And so many of these women were coming to the church asking for help. And Paul knows what's going on and he knows this is true and he knows some of them needs help, but probably not all of them. And so he says, again, I want you to support the widows who are genuinely in need. And then he says, but if any widow has children or even like grandchildren, he says, let them learn, the children and grandchildren, let them learn to practice godliness toward their own family first. And let the children and grandchildren repay their parents. Repay their parents for what? I don't know, for like the first 20 years of your life. How about that, you know? He's saying, let the kids and the family repay their parents. Why? For this pleases God. And so here's Paul. He's like, hey, man, here's the deal. All right, all you widows out there, okay, as Paul was saying in Ephesus, he says, man, if you got kids, have them take care of you. All right, don't bother the church with it. Sounds kind of harsh, doesn't it? You're like, dude, Paul, dude, they just lost their husband. Like, you know, come on. Now, what does this mean for me and you today? Well, I can tell you one thing. That means you are to take care of your mom, right? We're not too sure about that. My mom? My mom? Yeah, your mom. You are to take care of your mom, and you are to take care of your dad, and you are to take care of your grandpa, and you are to take care of your grandma. That's what that means, all right? That's what we should be able to take away from this here today. Right? And when we do that, which is a lot of work at certain times in life, I understand that. We all know that. But we shouldn't view it as a major inconvenience that you got to deal with. Like, oh man, I got to go mow mom's yard, you know, or oh, I got to do this. Oh, you know, they might be living with you or whatever it might be. It shouldn't be like this big old thing. When we view it as a major inconvenience, we're actually got the wrong mindset of what God has called us to do. I mean, this is a pretty important thing to God, by the way. All right, taking care of our parents or grandparents. You realize that, you know, in the Ten Commandments, like this made it in God's top five. God tells us, hey, I want you to honor them. And here, Paul, what's he saying? He's saying, I want you to practice your godliness towards your parents. Like you might be sitting here, you might know a lot about the Bible. You might know a lot about God. But what Paul's saying is he's saying, now's the time to actually do it. You know a lot, you got all the knowledge, but now's the time that for you to actually put it into practice. This is a good thing. Take care of your parents. Why? He says, because this pleases God, meaning when we care for our parents and our grandparents the way God has called us to do that, which is financially, emotionally, you know, all the different ways. When we do that, God looks down on us and it pleases him. He looks at you and he says, oh, I like that. Oh, that's good. Gives him joy. It's what we're trying to do with our lives, which means it's not the government's job to take care of your parents when they're old. Sorry. It also means that it's not the church's job to take care of your parents when they're old. What Paul says is yours. Paul says, no, it's on you. Now, I know that depending on the situation, that parents may get to the point physically where you need some like outside professional help. I totally understand that. But even when that time comes, man, don't forget about them. You know what I mean? Like there's way more than just supporting them financially and physically. I mean, there's emotionally, there's spiritually, there's intellectually, like there's all these different ways that we should be helping our parents and pouring into them in their old age. They are to be a priority in our life until they are gone. That's what Paul's saying. Let me just do a quick side note real quick to all you older people out there. Actually, I don't even know what to call you because old people just sounds disrespectful. And after reading this, I'm like, okay, all right, I shouldn't do that. So let me just say this. If you are a senior citizen, that, you know, that kind of dips into the 50s, so I don't even know if that counts, or a retiree or a golden ager or well-seasoned or, you know, vintage, whatever you want to call yourselves. Okay, if that's you out there. All right, listen in. All right, turn up the hearing aids. All right, focus in real quick. I'm serious. All right, this is what I want you to know. All right, if that is you out there, take this from a young guy. We here at Grace care about you. You hear me? We here at Grace, we care about you. You are important to us. And I know you may not be able to do all the things you used to do. You may not be able to be as involved as you used to be, but you are the foundation of this church. We as a church family, right? We need your experience. We need your wisdom. We need your maturity to be all that God has called us to be as a church family. It's kind of funny. Recently, we did kind of a study on the different campuses here at Grace to see which, you know, kind of the age groups and which campus is the younger campus and stuff like that. And Tiffin campus, we actually came out as the oldest age-wise campus. All right, so I hold that over the other guys all the time. I'm like, we're the most mature, we're the wisest, like we're, you know, we have the most experience, like we got the best people, and it's just true. Yeah, there you go. Okay. But I've talked to some of you older people, and I'm just saying, sometimes I'll talk to you, and you're like you're telling me this. I've never experienced it yet, but you're telling me, you're like, man, I just feel unproductive. You feel ineffective. You feel more and more as you age, you feel more and more disconnected. And I'm just saying, some of you need to hear this. If that is how you feel, that's the enemy talking. That's not true. You ain't dead, so God's not done with you. That's just reality. And so we are to take care of our family first. And then we are to take care of our church family. He says people, especially older people, like the widow who is truly in need. Someone who's left all alone and has put her hope in God. Right? This is somebody who is a godly woman. She's so godly. She's someone who continues night and day in her petitions and in her prayers. She's praying all the time. All right, she's doing all the good stuff. He says, however, all right, so in contrast to the godly woman, this lady who's a widow that can't support herself, that needs some help, he's saying there's some other ladies who are in kind of that same position, but their relationship with God's not as good as where it should be. He's saying these ladies are self-indulgent, meaning these ladies, they're a widow, sure, but they live the lives of luxury and comfort. Yet they're asking the church to cover the cost. And Paul's like, no, that's not right. We're not there to cover everybody's wants. We're there to cover everybody's needs because that's what truly is important. He says, these ladies are dead even while they're still alive, meaning they might feel alive, they might be physically alive, but inside, he says, man, they're spiritually dead. They got something wrong with them. He says, command this also so that they will be above reproach. See, here he is. He's saying, man, a woman whose husband has died and can't support herself and has no family, she should be taken care of by the people, by us, here in the church, but she needs to be a godly woman. And then Paul pivots back to all of us who have parents and grandparents still alive, and he's like, hey, just in case you missed it, like from a few verses before, a few sentences before, right? You are to take care of your family. He says, but if anybody does not provide for his own family, especially for his own household, those are the people who live within your walls of your house, especially that, he says, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Again, he's saying, man, you have to take care of your parents. And this goes beyond just your parents. All right, let me talk to men real quick. Let me call you out. Let me just say this. If you are a grown man in here and you got it going on and you are working age, he's saying, man, you should be working and providing for your family. That's your job. That's one of your main things in life. And so our society has produced a bunch of soft, lazy men who bank on their wife to do all the work. That's not what God has called us to do. And I know we live in a world where everything has to be even and the same and all that stuff. But the problem with that thinking is that's just not what God says. See, men and women, we have equal worth. We're completely equal worth-wise, but we have different roles. And guess what? That's okay. That's okay. Now, I'm not saying if your wife makes more money than you do, you are doing it wrong. That's not what I'm saying at all. Actually, it sounds like a pretty awesome situation to find yourself in. All right, you hit jackpot. Okay, good for you. But what I'm saying is, if you are a man, all right, if you're a grown man in here, your main job in life is to protect your family and to provide for your family by working. That's just how it works, regardless of if you are respected at home or not. Let me say, kids and wives, for you, help him be the best leader he can be. It's for your benefit, okay? Help him be the best leader he can be. And sometimes the words thank you, not real hard to say, and sometimes they go a long way as he's busting his butt providing for you. See, some, it's been a long time since your parents have heard these words come out of your mouth. It's been a long time. You might be sitting in here. You might be, I don't know, like 55 years old. You haven't said that for a long time. Like you, this afternoon, like what you should do is you should pick up your phone and you should call your mom and call your dad and you should just tell them thanks. Just because you haven't done it for a while or maybe even ever. And I get the excuses. We all have them. You know, it's, well, respect is earned and they haven't earned it. And you might be right. Or you don't know my mom, and you don't know my dad. Yeah, I don't know them, but you don't know your Bible, okay? And that's even more important. Respect is earned, sure, I understand that. But honor, honor is given. And it's not a command in the Bible for you to respect your parents. So you win that one. It's commanded that you do something so much more. You are to honor them, regardless of your relationship that you have with them. It's not honor them if they're good people, or if they were good parents, or if they're nice to you, is honor them. So men, take care of your households. Take care of your family. Everybody, we are to take care of our parents and to take care of our grandparents. And if you don't do it, I'm just saying, if you're not there for your parents, and if you're not providing for them, if you're not providing for your family, what's he say? You are worse than an unbeliever. Now, I don't know, I didn't get all into the Greek on this, but I'm just saying, that ain't good, okay? It's not good. So, Paul's saying, to wrap this kind of widow situation up, he says, no widow is to be enrolled on the list for support, and he gives some stipulations. Unless she is at least 60 years old, has been a wife of one husband, that means she has been faithful to her husband while he was alive, and is well known for good work. She's got to have a good reputation if you're going to support her. That is, if she has brought up children or shown hospitality or washed the saints' feet, that's just serving people, or helped the afflicted or devoted herself to every good work. Like, that's the kind of person, Timothy, that you should be looking for if you're going to help her. He says, but refuse to enroll the younger widows. Wait, what? That kind of sounds harsh. Like, what? Why? They don't get included? He's like, no. For when they are drawn away from Christ by desire, they are going to want to marry. And they will therefore receive condemnation because they have renounced their original pledge. Now, what the heck is he saying right there? What he's saying is, if they are receiving, right, financial help from the church family, they should be doing a bunch of good work for the church family. It's almost like kind of in Paul's mind, maybe not like an official role, but he's like, if they're receiving a bunch of help from the church, they should be working with the church. They should be, like, doing stuff. They should be helping in a bunch of different ways. But Paul's point here is he's saying if they're young and you know, they might promise to do this and that for the church, which is good, but then they might meet a guy and they might want to go get married, which is all good stuff, but then the issue is they're going to go back on all their promises. And that's wrong, what Paul's saying. But not only that, that's just one tiny part. He says at the same time, they're also, a lot of these younger women, they're going to learn to be idle. It's the exact opposite of what we're supposed to be as Christians, as Jesus followers. And they'll start going from house to house, and they're not only idle, but even worse than that, they're also gossips and busybodies saying things that they shouldn't be saying. I mean, here's Paul. he's like, you know, being young with a bunch of extra time on your hands, he's like, man, that's not good. It's not good for anybody. It's not how we are created to be. What ends up happening is you don't have any business of your own going on, so you get into everybody else's business. You start talking about all these people and that people. Hey, did you hear that she said this and she did this? Did you hear this all happen? And Paul's like, no, that is not the life that God has called you to be. Instead, he says, I want the younger women to go and marry again. Have kids. Manage your households. Give the adversary no opportunity to accuse us. He wants us to be busy. Being busy is good for us. He's saying, man, go get to work on living the life that God has called for you. And again, for a third time, he says, just in case we missed the first time or the second time, he's like, all right, just make sure we got this all nailed down. If any believing woman has widows in her family, all right, or even we can broaden this out because he's already done that. Older people in our family, parents and grandparents is what he's talking about. He says, let her help them and let the church not be burdened so that it can help widows in genuine need. That's what he's saying. Now, we only got a few minutes left, so I'm going to zip through the next part, which is concerning pastors. Okay, all right, that works out well for me. Okay, here we go. It gets awkward here. He says, the elders, right, who are good leaders. Now, real quick, kind of the bust, you might be sitting in here, you might be young, that's cool. All right, that's awesome. Let me kind of bust your bubble real quick, maybe shock the younger people a little bit. Here's the deal. God is into hierarchy. Yeah. He's also into order, all right? So God, what's that mean? That means God appoints certain people to be in charge of stuff. That's what that means. And so we see this. We know this deep down. Like, for a family, God appoints moms and dads to be in charge of kids. Like, we get that. At work, God appoints bosses to be in charge of their employees. Within the government, God appoints presidents to be in charge of the rest of us, okay? That's what he does. But here's the deal. God's hierarchy is different than the world's hierarchy. So we got to view this the correct way. God's hierarchy is more about responsibility, where we view the world's view of hierarchy is more about rights. The better hierarchy, you know, the better up you are up the ladder, the more rights you get. See, God's hierarchy is more about serving than being served. Like, my job as one of your pastors is literally to serve you. That's my job. I get paid to do that. See, sometimes it kind of drives me crazy when I hear people say, like, you know, God gave this church to this pastor. I'm like, no, God does not give churches to pastors. He gives pastors to churches. That's what he does. And so here, our staff here at Grace, we are here, number one, to help you reach as many people around you in your little world as you possibly can, all right? That's our job. And number two, we're also here to help you grow in your relationship with Jesus. By the way, if you reach people around you, that's the best way to grow in your relationship with Jesus, all right? So it's kind of all the same thing anyway. But that's what we are here for. And so we are here to serve you. He says, elders who are good leaders, he says, they are to be considered worthy of double honor, right? Kind of like where this is going. All right, this is going pretty good my way. He's actually talking financially, just throwing that out there, but it's true. He says, especially those who work hard at preaching and teaching. All right, moving on. He says, for the scripture says, do not muzzle an ox while it's treading out the grain. He's quoting Deuteronomy here, and the worker is worthy of his wages. Paul's saying, you are to financially take care of your family. You are to financially take care of widows and older people who cannot support themselves in that way, and you are to financially take care of your pastors. Okay, let me just say this, just from all of us here on staff at Grace, you guys take care of us on staff, and we are all extremely grateful for you. I'm just saying. Being paid, and not all churches do it this way, and a lot of smaller churches don't because they can't, but being paid staff, what that allows us on staff to do is it allows us to devote the time needed to this particular church family. Now, none of us, it's not like we ain't getting rich in this job, okay? So that's not an issue. But we don't have to worry about supporting our family with a second job somewhere. And because of that, we can devote 45 to 50 hours each week to this church apiece. That's the bonus of it. That's the benefit of it. And I'm just saying, look what God has done with it. The way we have done this, the way that Paul's talking about, it works. And God's using your generosity and our hard work to change this community. By the way, that's the reason why we on staff, it's a requirement that we on staff, that's the reason why we work hard. Because we understand that you are sacrificing through your generosity to make our jobs and work even possible. And by the way, you, as a church family, my church family, you provide more than financially for us. I mean, you're constantly giving us encouragement and compliments. I mean, sometimes I walk outside these doors in between services and you guys are like, you'll come up and you'll be like, man, that was one of the greatest sermons I've ever heard. And I'm like, dude, I bombed that one, all right? That was terrible. That was like one of the worst ones. You're a liar. So you guys are liars. And I know when you're lying to me, just saying. But I appreciate the encouragement. You know what I mean? Sometimes I'll walk to my desk and there's gift cards sitting right there, like fast food or something like that, for no reason. I don't even know who to thank because, like, there's no name on it. All right? Sometimes food just shows up in our office. Not only that, but you guys, what's even more important, means more to me, is you guys take care of my wife and you take care of my kids. Sometimes I'm, you know, hanging out with my kids and stuff, and they're telling me about some, like, almost like theological, like Bible story, you know, going on. And they're telling me from it from like the correct perspective. And I'm like, dude, okay, dang, this is about to be a theologian someday. You know, how'd this kid know that? Like, their pastor dad didn't teach them that yet. You know who did it? You. You did. And I want to thank you for that. Like, you're there for us. And we as a staff, we are here for you. Some of you guys, it's funny because you're like so polite on everything and you're just like, man, I'm so sorry to bother you. Like, I know you're busy. Like, you know, I just got this one tiny little question. I'm like, no, dude, you don't understand. Like, spit it out. This is literally our job. So let me do it. Like what's the deal? What's the question? See, we're family. Like, you don't walk up to your brother. I assume most of you don't. Like, you don't walk up to your brother and go, hey, I'm so sorry to bother you. You know, I know you're really busy, but, you know, I have one tiny little question. Like, you don't do that. What do you do with your brother? Right? Like somebody in your family, like you just walk up and you just talk. See, we're all busy. It's true. And we will make time for you because we're here to serve you. That's our job. And Paul's like, one more thing. It's almost like he could read Timothy's mind maybe at this point. Like, okay, so we're supposed to support, you know, the pastors and stuff like that. But what if the staff or elder is not doing too good morally? Like, you have all these stipulations, like for this widow, they got to do all this stuff. They got to be a good person, a good reputation. But what about the pastor? And Paul goes there next. He says, and if the pastor has issues, he says, don't accept an accusation against the pastor, all right, unless it's supported by two or three witnesses. What Paul's saying is there are some serious accountability to being a pastor, elder, or staff member at a church. That's what he's saying. And if you have an accusation against a staff member, we as a church, we take that very seriously because sin can cause pastors to be disqualified in God's eyes for a season. Some sin, depending on the sin, I mean, it could be for a lifetime. But your opinions also don't rule the day. And so he gives us guidelines to this. He says you need to have two or three witnesses. And you can't just like, oh, well, I don't like that he said that or did that, and I don't like that. That's not my preference. And so you get all mad. That's not what Paul's saying. He says, no, it has to be real, and it has to be something that actually goes against God, and there has to be more than one person that kind of back this up. And if it's true, Timothy, that one of the pastors or one of the people, in a sense, like on your staff, if they have done something wrong, he says, I want you to publicly rebuke those who sin. He's talking not about the church here. He's talking specifically about leaders. He says, call them out in front of everybody. Why? So that the rest will be afraid. So the rest will be like, oh, man, I better watch what I say. I better watch what I do. I better live the correct life. He says, I solemnly charge you before God and Christ and the angels to observe these things without prejudice, meaning judging correctly, and do nothing out of favoritism. See, here, the idea, the whole word, actually, the actual word for pastor, it literally means shepherd. And so Paul's like, man, if the shepherd is dangerous for the sheep, like the church, he's like, man, he's got to go. Can't keep giving him chance after chance after chance because of your friends. You can't keep showing favoritism to him when he's doing something wrong. You can't keep, you know, giving him chance after chance just because you like him. Paul's telling Timothy, he says, you do not protect the sinning shepherd. You protect the sheep. That's what matters. And because of that, he says, don't be too quick to appoint anyone as an elder and don't share in the sins of others. He says, Timothy, keep yourself pure. See, as Paul, I picture as an old man, as he's wrapping up this letter to a young pastor that he cares about a lot, like his own son, like his own kid. He writes, Timothy, take care of each other. How? Correct each other with respect. If your kids or if your grandkids, you got parents and grandparents still alive, he says, man, you need to take care of them when they're old. Paul's like, that's on you, whether you like them a lot or not. He says, the church, you are to take care of some of the women if they qualify, if they really, really, really need help. And you are to take care of your pastors. You're to take care of your elders. And above all, he's saying, because you are a family, you are to take care of each other. You are to take care of the church. Meaning if you are a leader in this room, man, you are looking after your people. That's the way God has designed the church to be. And we'll pick up there next week. Let's pray. God, we thank you for these words, and some of these words are complicated and even offensive to some of us. But Lord, this is what you say, so that's what goes. And it's logical. It makes sense, too. But God, we hope that you would help heal the relationships that are broken within our own lives and help us to take care of each other the way you've called us to take care of each other. And that's easier said than done, but Lord, we need your help. God, we thank you for this church and this family as you've put together here in Tiffin, Ohio. We thank you for this. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.